Hey everybody, and welcome to the 72nd episode of the Linux Link Tech Show, right? 72? Everybody, 72? 72 it is. Tonight we are joined by our buddy Pat.
How's it going?
Because Alan has copped out once again.
Alan's naked. Dead.
Yeah, it's like the
well, we got the new mixer. Alan's dead to us now. Yeah, good riddance thing. To bad trash.
Yeah.
That's not nice.
Anyway,
I miss Alan.
Anyway, yeah. Lots and lots of nifty crap. Stuff going on tonight.
Two things.
Well, we got an interview. Here's a question, though. Are we really going to do the interview?
Is it real or Memorex?
Are we going to have interesting conversation?
Oh, you're the best.
What kind of things are we going to talk about?
Well, we're going to talk to Varal Okan, who's the developer for QDVD Author. Which is a DVD author.
Pat, hold on a second. Do you want something to drink? We got Yingling and Diet Cherry Coke.
And water.
I'll take a Yingling.
For the man of Yingling.
Thank you.
Awesome. But yeah, and here the question of the night really is...
do you want something to drink?
Real question.
Is Dan ever going to wear pants again?
You know what? Before you guys came over, I had taken a nice little bath because I'm feeling sick. And I thought, maybe I should just... dress up in a towel for the show tonight. And I'm like, yeah.
Still wouldn't have fazed me at all, though, you know.
You'd have been like peeking under the table all the time. You were like, oh.
Take my shoes off so I can play footsie with you.
So, what did you guys think of the Linux Expo up in Boston last week?
It was good, but we can't talk about that until we play our promo.
One thing before that, why don't you just control the Skype and just go ahead and use that over there? And I will connect from it. That way it'll be a lot easier and I won't interfere with what you're doing.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you'll have a better time at it.
And just a little intro from our buddy Joel in Columbus.
Hi, this is Joel from Columbus, Ohio, when we're not cheering our Buckeyes on to another victory. We're listening to the Linux Link Tech Show. Go Bucks!
Go Bucks! And good promo, too, by the way. Sending off music mixed.
Sounds like he put a lot of effort into that.
Yeah, it looks really good. In the end, it kind of drops off pretty
band?
Quick.
No, that's not like the Ohio State Marching Band.
It's OSU, And interesting bit of trivia. And by the way, you know, we really dig it when you guys send us little promos and stuff like that. So please, keep sending them in, man. We'd love to play that stuff. A little bit of trivia with that is Joel sent that out, like he said, from Columbus, Ohio. I used to live in Columbus, Ohio
till 10
years ago. I really like Columbus. I really do. Columbus is, you know, it's a really big city because it's a capital city, right?
Capital of Ohio.
Yeah,
for those illiterate people out there, and people who are in other countries that might not realize.
It's the capital of Ohio, so it's a big city. But the difference between Columbus as a capital city and most other capital cities is that Columbus was a planned city. So, like this, the streets and the blocks are square and stuff like that, and you can actually find your way around most of the time. And
unlike Boston.
Unlike Boston, right. Unlike Boston.
One thing I learned from our trip to Boston is three rights make a left.
Did you have any trouble getting out of Boston?
Very true.
A little bit. But once we found the highway, we got the heck out of there. We took 84 through Connecticut.
Yeah, we ended up in the wrong lane and got in back into Center City, Boston.
The streets are very poorly marked there.
More eventful than that.
It was something.
Yeah, it sucked, the roads in Boston.
A nice little place, though.
Oh, boy.
Or a big place.
Yeah, something like that. But hey, so, you know, what was your impressions of the first Linux World Expo in Boston?
I already gave my main impression. Didn't you hear it?
Yeah. But, I mean, like, you know, expound upon that.
I heard it.
I spent 15 minutes on it. Didn't you download it?
I saw
what,
it.
What, on your Dan's Ranch?
You didn't get the new one?
No, I didn't get the new one.
You didn't get the new one?
I must not have looked.
Oh, man, I did. I put one out over the weekend.
Oh, dude, no, I have to go.
My biggest complaint, you know, the only thing I could complain about at Linux World Expo was the number of vendors that use PowerPoint.
As their
presentation media. And I just think that's poor taste. And I don't see how a vendor could sit there and try and sell me a Linux product or a Linux service and say how great it is and how wonderful it is while they're demonstrating it to me on a Windows machine. I mean, come on.
That's pretty lame. Funny.
I just think that's in poor taste. I don't know if they... I don't know. They don't give a damn. They just want your money.
Yeah.
They don't care if it's Linux or Windows.
That's true. And I
Plan 9.
Pretty much agree. I thought it was cool because there were a lot more and more varied vendors than the past couple of previous venues in New York City. Some really interesting stuff going on there. And some really stupid stuff going on there, too.
Where, at the expo?
At the expo, right. I think that the all-time dumbest thing that I saw or that we sat around for was the, what was it, Unisys? Unisys presentation, where they were hyping up their involvement in Linux.
Oh, that turned you off
right from
the beginning.
Oh, man, and this is right when we got in there.
All those people want to sell you something other than i386 architecture.
Right. They're hyping up their involvement with Linux and...
Screw power.
And they
PC.
Had nothing to say. Like, it was a solid 15 minutes worth of complete and utter bullshit. You know, it was... Man, the corporate power words were flying everywhere. And in essence, what they said, you know, was that they're the only people that are supporting i386 Linux right now. And that they have some magical solution to, for some magical, I don't even know if it was a solution. They're just talking about this magical thing where, like, they would be able to tell you based on one board meeting, they'd be able to tell you, like, what your future is.
Sounds
with
like
Linux and stuff.
They log in and run Fortune.
Yeah, right. It must be a Fortune program, a new one.
You know, and I caught that, too, when they said that everybody else is going to sell you on PowerPC architecture
or
RISC, you know. And they're like, where do you... I don't... You know, what was HP doing there? And IBM and AMD. I mean, AMD's not going to sell you on
Intel, you know?
Intel was there.
And you know, but Unisys was there making sure that everybody knew that they were the only i386 solution.
Wasn't Unisys the company that a few years ago was like... Linux, absolutely not. And they, like, partnered with Windows. Was that them?
Yes, it was.
And they were like,
I'll tell you, they switched bedfellows an awful lot, it seems. But still, my whole thing is, like, I had absolutely, after sitting there for 15 minutes listening to them ramble back and forth, I had no idea what the hell it is that they were providing. other than Linux support. But, you know, they only spent 20 seconds on that. The rest of it they spent talking about how they're going to be able to help you run your business efficiently and forecast what your needs are going to be in the future and stuff like that. How the hell do you do that? You know what I mean? It was a giant line of BS. But enough of them, I guess. That was just my impression, by the way.
I thought it was great. I enjoyed the show.
You like Eunice's show?
I didn't go to that. I didn't bother with that. I didn't want to waste my time. The one thing that I thought that really stuck out at me was, you know, Sun had their usually huge, you know, presentation and all that.
Mm-hmm.
I just wish they would make up their minds. Do they love Linux or do they hate it? It seems they change their minds every other month, you know?
Yeah, well, that's probably exactly it. It depends on where the paycheck is coming from, you know?
And what is going on at the time. If they're talking to Solaris, admins, investors, Java investors, Linux sucks. Microsoft, Linux sucks. But when it comes to Linux Java desktop now, there's... that's... can't get
looking glass.
Wrong. But you know what? At least they're in there.
Yeah, they're there. And they're very professional.
They gave us, they opened up Star Office, so we have, you know, them to thank for a lot of open office.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And, we said that we'd mention Sun and give some good words to Sun. I mean, they were, at least there, they were nice.
That's right. And they give us really cool-looking pens, too.
Yes. Those pens were
rocket
awesome.
Rocket ship pens? Those are really freaking cool.
There was a lot of good. That's it. You got to get there the first day of the exhibit when you get all that great stuff.
See, and we're going to make a point to make sure we get there.
The Unreal Tournament was awesome. Did you guys play that at all?
No.
I saw it. That was really cool.
Did you play it?
I played a little bit, yeah.
They didn't have it open when I went past there. So, and when I came back, I think it was like at the end.
They were running on Sun servers that had AMD processors, which was a little out of the norm for them.
It was good stuff. What they're talking about is there was a gaming pavilion set up where several people could, you know, game against one another and stuff. It was really cool.
Yeah, it was cool.
It really was
a LAN party.
It was a LAN party.
On awesome hardware.
Around a little pavilion, and it was pretty cool. I mean, I didn't get into it because every time I went by, there's like people lined up against the wall to play with this stuff. But it did look really cool. So
yeah, you should cut right to the chase when you go up to those damn vendors. And say, look, I don't really want to sit here and listen to your spiel. I just want that damn pen. So swipe that card. give me the T-shirt.
And
let's
it.
Get the hell out of here. Right. Let's get both what we both get what we want.
That's right.
About a month later, you get all the emails.
You get a name, and I get the...
Well, see, that's my spam filter. Sort
that's why
that
you
out.
Have to. No, that's why when you sign up for one of these things, you have to be smart about it, and you have to go out and create yourself a Hotmail account,
yep, a Yahoo,
or a Yahoo, something like that, or an extra Gmail account or something, and you just point them off to that, and let them spam the hell right out of it. You know, you can go once a month, twice a month, something, check it out, see if there actually is anything that's interesting. But as far as, like, going to one of these places and registering with your normal email address, I would not advocate
pass.
That at all. Yeah.
I just, you know, use my spam account. Because the vendor loves nothing more than when they see your email address is spam.
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 So were we too nice to Matt Friedman? I mean, I thought it was a decent interview.
I thought it was, too.
No, I liked that. I thought Matt was pretty cool, man. I understand that a lot of people have been saying that the interview that the Lug Radio guys did
with Miguel Diacaza
with Miguel was sort of hostile. I didn't think it was really hostile. I mean, they were nasty. They were trying to make their points, and he was trying to make his point. And you know, everybody's.
I think it came back around.
Yeah,
I think there was a little. I think there was a kind of a misunderstanding
I think there was a little misunderstanding going on, but and it was like a heated discussion, but I don't think it was hostility, you know. I thought it was a good interview, and you know, honestly, we ran into...
You know what they also mentioned about Cubase recording other
shows. That's going to get him in trouble. But you know what, honestly, we ran into Miguel at the Linux World Expo, and he really did not seem any worse for wear. In fact...
We did?
Yeah.
I didn't see him.
Wasn't he there? He was at the GNOME Pavilion.
I didn't even pick up on that. We were talking to him, too.
Yeah. We talked to Miguel.
Dan,
he
wake up, Dan.
He was at the Gnome Pavilion. We were talking to him for like 10 or 15 minutes.
Dan, that must have been after the liquid lunch, you guys.
And as far as I know, he wasn't, you know, he didn't seem any worse for wear. In fact, didn't we talk to him and convince him that maybe he would like to do an interview with us at some point in time?
I don't know. I should have paid more attention to who I was talking to.
Yeah, that was Miguel.
Oh, hey, Miguel. Right? Who are you?
Unless I'm going crazy,
it is Gnome.
Yeah, Gnome.
I was talking to Warren Woodrow, I think his name is. He's the main developer from Mephis, and he seemed pretty interested in coming on, so hopefully we can have him soon.
And John Mad Dog Hall.
Yeah, I shook hands.
But I didn't get to see Doc.
I talked to Doc for a bit.
I would have liked to talk to Doc.
Nice guy.
I like Doc. Doc is a cool guy.
And
who else did we run into?
I thought I saw Chris DeBona, but it wasn't him. Some guy just looked like him.
Who's Boner?
Chris DeBona.
You know, was Microsoft wasn't there, were they?
Not this time.
No.
You know, I didn't even think about that. It was I wonder why they weren't there.
Maybe they finally got smart. They probably got
the hint.
Yeah, they got enough abuse to last.
They said, you know, we don't have to show up. They'll just demonstrate their products on our software, so no problem.
Yeah, right. Yeah. We don't have to be there because we all know they're PowerPoint. Demonstrating their stuff on PowerPoint.
Bad taste, dipshits.
Bad form.
It's kind of
bad taste.
Bad form.
What time are we supposed to talk to
Varel? Right now.
Okay.
Hello. Hello.
This is Varel
O'Kan.
O'Kan, the author of QDVD, which I'm excited about because now I am ready to start making movies on my
and
Linux
burn
box.
DVDs.
Yeah, because now you got a wicked fast machine.
You dang.
Are we getting hold of him?
Smell good. Taste like.
Ringing.
That seemed to take a long time to connect.
There we go. Hello, Varel.
Hello?
Hello?
Hello, Varel.
Hi.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you quite well. How are you doing tonight?
Hey, can you hear me?
Yes, we can. We can hear you.
We can hear you. Can you hear us?
You know what? I better check and make sure the mixer.
You better check your mic and make sure that we're sending stuff out the mic.
Hello?
Hello. Varel.
Hold on a second. Oh,
I am him over there and tell him that we're going to check our mic settings real fast.
Go ahead. Start talking now.
Hello?
Hello, Varel. Can you hear us?
How embarrassing. This is just like our show. Yeah. Today, you know?
Is he still there?
No.
Hello?
No, he's calling. He's calling again. Hold on.
We're ringing.
We are?
Yeah, it's ringing.
Hello?
You know what? I said to myself... Make sure to turn the mic back on.
The return was turned down?
I rebooted my system yesterday.
Oh, there you go.
Because I recompiled my kernel.
Oh, excuses, Dan.
Yeah. Well, that's a topic for a little bit later, why that happened. Fun.
Okay, now here's the deal, right? For all you people, for future reference, who want to talk to us via Skype, if we at some point screw up our Skype connection... And we decide to call you back, answering is a good thing. Because we're still ringing.
As the show falls flat on its face.
Still ringing. Nobody answering. Anyway.
He's like, screw those guys.
Yeah, well, probably.
I'm going over to Lug Radio.
Go over to Lug Radio. They'll argue with you over there.
It won't be on some other show we won't mention.
Anyway, so what else is... Oh, you know, what I wanted to mention, like a public service announcement thing, right? I just found out... Well, actually, I found out a little while ago, but I haven't had a chance to mention it yet. The Panera Bread place there.
Right. Okay. I'm trying to think, what project is Panera?
No. Panera
Hello?
Bread
place. Hello? Can you hear us?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. Can you hear us?
Hello?
Hello, folks?
Hey, what's going on, Varel?
Can you hear us? You know, it's quite possibly not on our end, you know?
Do the Skype call test. Let's just make sure that
Varel, we're going to hang up.
Well, if he can't hear us. He can't hear us, man.
There we go. I see him.
Okay, anyway, well, he's setting up the Skype call real quick. Telling Varel that something's wrong. Maybe there's something wrong on his end. We don't know. What I was going to say about Panera is Panera provides free internet access. And this is what I've heard, right? Have any guys checked to verify that at all? Perhaps? Anyone on the anyone
I've
on the IRC?
I've never gone to Panera.
Right, there's
only
a new one.
Bagels.
It's a new one right over on 33.
Yeah, but I don't. I haven't gone to it.
All right. Well, I'll
it's
write
always
that.
So busy over there.
I'll write that. But the reason that I mention it, I thought I'd bring it up, like I said, because you know most Linux people are thrifty. Most Linux people that I know are thrifty, and I was just interested to see if anybody had actually tried it. Now, I have gone. I had no idea at the time, last time I went.
Welcome
that
to Skype testing site.
Oh, here we go.
We're doing our test to make sure
everything's during
separate.
10 seconds no, after the beep.
What the hell?
Message will be played back to you.
This is a test of Skype to see that we
Hello?
Have everything set up correctly. We're being very unprofessional here. Thank you.
Here we go. We're going to see if it works.
Nothing.
All right, I think I know what the problem.
The levels are down.
Dan screwed something. Says Gorkon says damn good bagels here. Last time I went to Panera, and this is my honest opinion. So like, if you work for Panera or you own Panera or what, tough. My opinion of Panera is that Panera is the yuppie version of Dunkin' Donuts. Okay, they have like really some real, and you know this is just my experience, right? So, but they had some really harsh coffee going on there. It smells really awesome, right? But little harsh on the coffee, sort of like battery acid. And their big thing over there is that they want to sell, you know, the baked goods, and then the baked goods that they do have really,
Welcome to
really
Skype
nice.
Testing
we doing
oh, okay, here we go.
Let's see if this works.
During 10 seconds after
here we go.
The
I'm
beep.
Try this one
and
more time.
The message will be played back to you.
Hello, this is Link from the Linux Link Tech Show. If I can hear me, it's working. Here it comes.
There we go.
The anticipation.
Fingers are crossed.
Anticipation is killing me. Hello, this is Link from the Linux Link Tech Show. I'm talking to myself.
Yes,
it's awesome.
Okay.
Who's the idiot that plugged it into the wrong port?
I don't know, man.
Don't look at me.
It must have been that damn Dan guy who's talking about his fast computer
okay.
all the time.
There we go. We're calling Varel.
You know what? They don't mark the jacks right back. All right,
but anyway, listen, Panera. The coffee was like battery acid, right? Really, really strong. And you go in there, and they want to sell you the... what now? What the heck?
Hey, Foxa, I think it works now.
Okay.
Oh, we're there.
Varel, how are you tonight?
I'm doing fine.
Sorry about that. That was Link's fault.
All right. Yeah, I always blame it on the other.
We worked out our issues, but we're good to go now. So, you just released QDVD Author version 009. Tell us what's new in this version.
That's right. I implemented actually a whole lot of new things in this version. So if you have an older version, if you know it from an older version, you will hardly recognize this one. I was working hard the last 3 months to completely rework the media interface, meaning it's not possible to have a preview of the movies that you're actually putting together. I also restructured the temp file hierarchy, so everything is stored on the temp file temp directory that you can specify. And it has a certain structure, which is, I think, fairly logical. Whereas I added support for movie menus and movie buttons, so you can have a small animation, movie clips, that actually acts as a button. Implemented basic undo-redo functionality, drag-and-drop support. I implemented an autosave version. And a couple of other smaller changes, but those were the highlights.
So
definitely the most time I spend on the media interface, which I think is going to help us in the future.
So I downloaded the latest version, and I did notice it was very much different from the last version. The system that I compiled it on was a much quicker system, so that probably had to do a lot with it. The interfaces, like you were saying, they look very different. I was able to create a slideshow DVD. I burned that. I did a little test of that, and that worked pretty well. I tried burning a DVD with some videos that I had recorded with MIT-TV, and then I had it edit out the commercials, but it didn't like the video files that I recorded with MIT-TV. But I also tried burning with a video clip, just an AVI file, and that worked okay. Some of the things I noticed was, you know, a lot of the help buttons, they weren't functional, which is understandable because this is an alpha version, correct?
That's correct. I consider it still alpha. For me, it's simply a way to show people, hey, this is something you can use on your own. But at this point, it's just in the early stages. I still have a lot of plans, a lot of features that I want to implement before I go to beta. For me, beta is a stage where you actually go in and fix the bugs rather than introduce new features that will make it even more complex and introduce more bugs.
Now, you work on this primarily just on the side for the love of it, right? This isn't your main thing. You're reading your resume, and I noticed you had done some development for satellite tracking software. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. Actually, I did write a program for Windows. I shouldn't say, but I did write it for the other operating system as my final exam. And it's a program that you can use to track satellite positions. And it's fairly, the focus on that program was usability and to give somebody a tool to actually discover the mechanics of how satellites rotate around the globe and how they interact, how the form of it looks like a sinus over the curve if you look on the 2D map. And I think my program, if you use it, if you play around, you can fairly easily do all of that. I got it to work one time under Wine already.
So you're looking for employment, right? You're down in where? In Northern Virginia?
Yeah. So I'm in the Herndon area, close to Washington, D.C.
Washington, D.C. Now, you're originally, correct?
Yeah. I came over in 97, was working for a company here, then they offered me an opportunity to go back to Europe, where I stayed for 4 years in France, and since August last year, that was a great time over there.
Where in Germany are you from?
Frankfurt.
Oh, okay.
Let me ask you, Val, growing up in Germany as a developer and a programmer, What was the perspective of Linux, you know, as opposed to being over here? I mean, you've lived over here for a few years. Is it that much more prevalent over there?
The one big difference that I find in the media, especially in the printed media, you go over there, you go in a magazine store, and I mean like any store, and you find at least a dozen of Linux magazines. And most of them, if not all, do come with CDs or DVDs by now. So if you want to have the latest Mandrake version, you don't need to go and download it. You go, you spend $5 or less, you get yourself a magazine. And I think part of the reason why a lot of the development, the open source development, is coming from France and Germany is simply because the resources are so easy. Whereas here in the States, if you want to play Linux, you go to any shop, you go to any magazine store, it's hard to find just anything related to Linux. Everything is just focused on Windows. Everything.
I'm moving out of the country.
Seriously. But back to QDVD Author, the project is hosted on SourceForge, and you're doing all the work primarily, right? You're the main developer, right?
Sorry, can you repeat?
You're the main developer, right? And your project is hosted on SourceForge, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. I'm the only developer. Unfortunately, I would like if other people would come and contribute. I have one big help, which is Scott Barninger. If he's listening or live or later on, I I really want to thank him for putting together all the RPMs. I myself could not put together all the
that was interesting,
operating system that he's providing.
So, when do you think you're going to make it? Like, what is your time frame? Do you have one, the first beta?
The nice thing about open source and being the sole programmer at this point, you don't really need a time frame. I have a certain set of goals that I want to accomplish before I switch to beta. So currently, I would say I would probably estimate it's going to take me another 2 to 3 months before I switch to beta.
Now you're saying that you're doing this pretty much on your own with one other person. Would you take help, for instance, people if they want to volunteer to be testers or documentation?
You know, one thing about the open source, one big open source myth is that you start a project, and even if it's a nice project, you get people willing to help. And I think it's a myth, because I'm always looking for people helping me. I have a couple of people who actually translated my application to different languages, and I think putting it all together, I got maybe 3 or 4 people who sent me in bug fixes throughout the whole period the project is up. So I'm always really thankful about when people contact me and they want to help. Unfortunately, I have to say, most of the times there's not a lot that I actually get back. So I would be more than happy if people would join the project and would contribute to the project. Because here, from my point of view, I'm one guy. I have my thoughts about how a project should look like, but hey, maybe there's a much, much better way of doing things. Maybe there's a much easier way of doing things. And especially in creating the XML files for DVD author to put the DVD together, I'm not that perfect in putting that together. I would like to get people helping me with that, for example, to make the structure, the engine that actually creates the DVD, much more flexible, much more usable. So yeah, I'm always looking for new people wanting to help.
You know, I really think what you're doing is fantastic. DVD authoring is one of the weaknesses where, you know, that Linux still has. You know, the other being video editing, which is improving greatly lately, especially with the newer version of Kino. DVD authoring, you know, DVD author is command line for people that are not familiar with it. And what Varro's program does, what it does is it ties together all the packages and programs that you really need to put together, you know, a decent quality DVD, you know, with menus and previews and buttons and everything. And I think once your program stabilizes and more people use it, I think more and more people will be moving away from Windows permanently. You know, DVD authoring is one of the few things that I personally still do in Windows besides video editing. And there's not much else. Well, I'm being honest. You know, and I think, you know, programs like Varro's, you know, are helping us to get away from Windows. And I'm looking forward to the day where I can, you know, completely wipe out that Windows partition for good.
Hey, Varro.
That sounds like a plan.
Yeah. Obviously, you do some video editing on your system. So what do you use for video editing?
Actually, I use Kino only to import the video files and then convert it using a command line. And I don't have any scripts put together to do it automatically, so every time I do go that far, I go and do research and see which command lines I need to use to convert it into the correct format. And then all I do is just put it together. And with the latest version, it's actually very easy to put together a menu. So it's more like playing around with it.
Uh-huh.
So I'm not doing too much editing as per se. I'm just putting it all together.
Okay. So you basically captured a video with Kino, exported it out into a specific format, and then throw it in a QDVD offer to put it on the DVD, right?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
What are some of the other applications that your program is calling? I noticed MJPEG Tools and DVD Slideshow. Are there any other ones?
Yeah, actually, Let me just go there. Actually, DVD author, as I said, is the main engine to create the menus and to put it in a format that is a DVD. And you control it through an XML file. Then I have the MJ tools, which help me to convert our images to video stream, because everything on a DVD is a video, MPEG-2 video. And the MPEG tools can be include the MPEG-2 encoder. Then I'm using NetPBM, which actually is used to create a stream which you can feed into MPEG-2 encoder. DVD slideshow itself is a bash script, which needs some other applications like SOX, which is sound exchange to generate the background sound for your slideshows. Then you need LAME for MPEG-3 encoding, and Ogvorbis codecs if you want to include an RAW file. So, and all of that, you also need for the GUI interface, as I said, the media engine, which you can use, choose in my application the Xine libraries or MPlayer, or if the VLC, the VideoLAN client, comes along and they release a stable API, I will also include an interface to that media engine. So it's really flexible to give the end user the choice of which engine he wants to use, which tools he wants to use. And one feature that QDVD author has is it puts together everything, or you put together the whole menu structure. When you click on create, it will actually show you a dialog box where you have all the commands that are going to be executed to create the final DVD. And for those commands that have multiple choices, multiple utilities that do the same thing, I supply multiple choices so the user can actually go and say, hey, I don't have LAME installed, but I have another utility installed thing. I have SOX, for example. So he can go and pick another command line, and he doesn't need to go and install especially what my program depends on, because I really try to keep the dependencies down so that you can use it on a lot of platforms.
You built this using the Qt library, correct?
Yeah, that's the only real requirement that you need. It's the Qt libraries. Some people came to me and they wanted me to implement the KDE libraries because the file open dialog is much nicer, etc., etc. But I want to really keep it simple and keep the dependencies down, and that's why I'm using Qt only.
Let me ask you, are you familiar with any of the Windows video editing and DVD authoring programs, or some of the Apple programs like iDVD or iMovie? Or, you know, when you're putting together your interface, are you going through past experience, you know, using other programs, or are you just simply doing what you think is simple and straightforward?
No, actually what I'm doing is I'm going to the websites. There are a couple of really nice, good websites which have tutorials to use different tools. And I look at the tutorials and I see what I like, what could be useful, and the interfaces that are simple. And one thing that I also want to mention here, since we're open source, we're not really competitors, but there's another project out there called DVD Styler, also hosted on SourceForge.net. It does basically the same thing, but if you use that program, it does a couple of things easier than QDVD Author. So I'm tending to later on trying to improve on the author lags a little bit. And I've never used any of the programs under Windows. But the one program that I really like from the tutorials and everything is called DVD Lab. And that looks like a really, really cool program that does everything that you need to do DVD off.
Is that Windows?
Fortunately, the other operating system, yeah.
You know, I hope to be authoring a DVD in the next couple of months. And I really look forward to playing around with your application. So, you know, right off the bat,
yeah,
I'm excited.
If you...
I'm sorry, go ahead.
yeah, and if you do, and if you have some feedback, if you think something could be done easier or better, or you find a bug, just let me know. Drop me a line. I'm always glad if something that I missed.
You'll be definitely getting some feedback from me as I go through it. I mean, what I've seen so far is very promising, and I really encourage you to continue doing it. And if anybody uses your program, I encourage them to go to your website, and if they, contribute financially, contribute to the project, doing bug testing or just general feedback. I encourage people, please get involved and help them out.
Yeah, that would be great. And as I said, the more people actually look at the project, the more people that use it, the easier I can do it. The more I get a feel of what the end user needs. In business, you always hear, always listen to your customers. And I'm here, I'm listening, but I get just a certain amount of feedback. Most of the feedback is done through the forum, which is pretty active, medium active. But most of the topics are concerning bugs or something that doesn't work, and so I'm helping out. So I'm always trying to answer all the questions that are open.
Let me ask you, as far as employment that you're looking to do, are you looking to do something, Linux related, or are you just looking to get something to start working?
Well, before I used to work for a satellite operator, and that was a great job. It was an interesting field. It was challenging. It had, everything I needed. You put me in a room with 5-6 computers, at least 2 of them running Linux, and I'm happy. So anything that is halfway exciting and offers me a possibility to improve, I'm more than happy to take. But at this current time, coming back from Europe, I'm simply looking to find a job ASAP.
I hear you. Well, let me ask you something. What are some of the skill sets that an application developer, who's looking to do a project like QDVD, what does he need to get going? C++, some kind of framework tool like Qt or GTK? What are your suggestions?
I think the most important point is that somebody who wants to help out, just use the application and finds the part that he's interested in, and then he can start working on it. So I programmed it in C++ using Qt. That would be definitely a big, big plus. But you don't need to know any of this. You can also, if you say, for example, hey, this dialogue looks not right, I can do a much nicer one. You don't need to even program it. You go in a utility from Trolltech called Designer, which is a GUI designer, and you just play around. You put something together that looks better, and you send it over, and it's great.
Wait, was there any particular was there any particular reason why you decided to go with Qt? Are you just more familiar with it because you've used it in the past?
I was looking into Qt or GTK, obviously the two big competitors in the current market. And I decided for Qt because it's object-oriented and it's a C++ library. And so far I haven't found any bad thing about it. As I said, my previous project under Windows was programmed in MFC, the Microsoft Foundation classes, and man, they suck. I mean, really. They describe something in the documentation, and you implement it, it's not working, and you have 1 or 2 days troubleshooting to just finally find out, hey, somewhere in their classes, in their secret source code that you cannot see, that it's not working, and you have to find a workaround. The Qt libraries, I have to say, it is a company that's behind it, but they publish it under the GPL if you program an open source project. And it's working. It does exactly what documentation does. So I'm pretty happy with that choice so far. I haven't used GTK, really used GTK so far. So I cannot say if it's good, better, worse. I think it's a similar thing that between GNOME and KDE. It's a choice that people make. So I choose Qt.
I think it looks great. I mean, when I took the source code and compiled it. The installer application worked pretty well. I mean, once I got the KDE development libraries, it worked like a champ. It got compiled, it brought up the menus. You do your compile and your install, and it was pretty easy. I was pleasantly surprised how easy it was to install it.
Okay, great. I heard also from some other people that they had some problems, mainly from people who are using Linux versions that are not the standard, I'd say. I think Arch Linux had some problems, but as I said, if I don't get the feedback that something is not working, I cannot correct it.
Let me ask you, the distro that you developed it on, what is it, SUSE?
Yeah, SUSE 9.2 currently.
Now you use SUSE because that's just what you're familiar with.
Yeah, I installed actually my first SUSE in 94-95, version 4.3 back then, and it took me over a week to install and to get running and everything. And coming from Germany, obviously SUSE is also it's a German distribution, so it was a natural choice, and I more or less grew up with it.
Have you looked at any other distributions lately?
I want to look into other distributions. I'm not too sure. SUSE was bought by Novell, and I'm not too sure which way they're going. They already closed down the personal editions. Currently, you can only buy SUSE Linux Professional, which is expensive, I think. So if that continues, go and check out Debian or Gentoo.
Check out Slackware, too.
I'm happy. Slackware, maybe.
Slackware's fantastic. We're a bunch of Slack geeks.
But you also promoted Ubuntu last time around, and maybe that's another choice.
That's a Debian-based distro, and it's just an easier install in general.
Debian.
And Dan could talk about it because he was the one who really, really put it through the paces, especially on PPC.
Yeah. Honestly, if I was a developer, I would probably go with Debian as opposed to Ubuntu. I think Ubuntu's great, but it's a desktop. It's not so much as a developer.
It doesn't come with any developers.
Users, yeah. Well, I mean, you'd have to download those
separately.
Yeah, separately. You Synaptic and get them in. But yeah. I'm just thinking, maybe I would go with Debian as opposed to Ubuntu.
See, now, what I would think is if I were a developer, not just, doing best crap that I do, but developer trying to use different libraries and things like that, I would really look at Slackware because Slackware uses vanilla everything, the vanilla libraries and stuff like that, and vanilla kernels straight from their contributing authors with no patches or modifications to them. So you pretty much know what you're getting into. If the works for the author, it'll work on Slackware kind of thing. That's just my opinion, of course. But
they're all good. Debian, Gentoo, Slackware. I call them the Holy Trinity.
I think the most important point in the other operating system.
Oh, without a doubt.
Absolutely.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt.
So, being from Germany and growing up with SUSE, are you kind of sad to see that SUSE was bought out by Novell, an American company? And do you think that, I hear that you're a little leery.
Yes and no. I mean, if you look at StarOffice, which became then OpenOffice,
right,
and Sun still distributes at StarOffice. It's something that really actually developed pretty positive. Also, German company, and I was not too unhappy when Sun went along and they said, hey, here, you can have it for free or you can buy it from us. So I use it for free, and that's a great thing. And the same with SUSE. They were bought out by Novell, and one of the tools that SUSE did not release on the GPL was their admin tool called Yast. And Novell bought it, which is great. So you have to see and what business does with what they actually get. It might be positive, it might be negative, but I keep my eye open, and if I see it does not I don't like the policies that they actually put on that distribution, I will switch. Another contender that I actually used was Mandrake, which is a fairly nice distro itself as well.
We spoke to the Novell people last week at the expo in, up in Boston, and they were very adamant that, you know, SUSE is their distro of choice. That, you know, they've released the Novell corporate desktop, which is kind of competing with the Red Hat distribution.
Yeah.
But they seem pretty strong that, you know, they're keeping SUSE around. And the only thing that kind of, like, you know, I don't know, was a little bit of a warning was, you know, the way they were talking about, you know, KDE and GNU. Like, the only major change that they were planning. That's what I got out of the interview, talking to Nat and the other guy.
Yeah, I think that's a major headache that companies currently have, that they do want to build to GNOME and KDE. It's easier to have it on
GNOME.
Was freaking
out at me today, man.
Thing. But it's like, you know, people, the one thing that Linux is currently is because people do have a choice. Have the choice to use another Windows manager. I can use VFM W2. I can use some other Windows manager. You know, that's the great thing about Linux. And if the company goes along and trying to kill that and make something that looks like Windows, I think a lot of people will actually go ahead and say, well, I don't need it. I want my desktop. I want it my way. I use the vanilla KDE desktop that comes with the SUSE. I like it a lot. You can configure it. I activate all the bells and whistles that it has. And it looks just great.
VI or Emacs?
I'm using VI. I used Emacs before, but my main development tool is actually it's Kate. That's the text editor of KDE, which is great.
What do you use for debugging the software?
For debugging?
Yeah. What do you use for debugging?
For debugging, I use the GNOME debugger standard. I don't have a very sophisticated development environment, and the only thing that I try to update or to follow like a industry, like a real application, is to update the CVS on a regular basis and have the code in order. But since I'm the only developer at this time, it's not really one of my major concerns.
So you just keep it simple, right? Just use what you know and go with that.
Right, right. I just try to use whatever I can use without going studying or memorizing 200 keystrokes before I get to use the utility really thoroughly.
That's a good point. That is a good point.
I think we're going to wrap it up. Thank you for coming on. I'm really thankful for all the efforts that you're doing with the application. And I encourage people to, you know, check it out, try it out, send your feedback, you know, pass on a project if they're willing to contribute.
Barrel,
that would be great.
Before we wrap this up, I have a little question for you. Because I couldn't help myself. I had to check out your application, and I'm compiling it now. This is actually the first time...
What a surprise.
Right. It was weird. I expected it, but it brought up this... this graph, and it's quite interesting. I've never seen that, particularly with a Qt application before.
Smaller.
It's pretty.
Yeah, as I said, this is a remainder from my experience that I had from the other operating system. It's made easy, and one I think is lacks currently on the Linux platform is the configure. How many people do actually go ahead and type in configure -help to see all the options that you have? So at that point, when a QDVD author had this choice between a couple of things, I was thinking, why not just create a simple, straightforward GUI and let the user, you know, click on a button rather than go in and type in on the command line. Now you can use configure as well to, on the command line, but I do it over there. It doesn't take a lot of effort, and it's a straightforward, very simple application. No big secrets there.
Yeah, I'm going to find this out in a few minutes myself, but when you go through the actual compile and it gets to the point of install, does it ask you to log, you know, put in your root password to do the install, or does it, if you didn't launch this as root, does it bomb it?
What I did with that was I actually check if you have a KDE or a GNOME installed, and then follow the list and look for the KDE or for the GNOME utility that asks for the password. So I give I can give the control back to the utility to ask for them.
Dan is
and then it will do the install. Just
Dan is compiling this on his Apple, by the way.
No, he's compiling it on his Slack box.
Okay.
Off of the Apple.
Oh, okay. You're doing VNC.
No, I'm just SSH.
Okay.
Wrong twice! Mm. Eh. Sorry.
He's flagged. That's it. No more beer for Pat tonight.
It's my limit.
Well, actually, since the QDVD author should only use in Qt 3.1 or better, you're even under the other operating system. Obviously, you will have problems when you want to use some of the utilities that are not available on that platform. But compilation, at least you should be able to compile it. One more thing, just to give you an idea of what I intend to do for the next version. One point that you brought up before was that you could not create a DVD with the material that you have. So the major item for the next version is to implement this fairly simple, straightforward, basic transcoding interface that you can convert any source into MPEG-2 and burn it to DVD. And then also improve, I started implementing undo redo functionality in the last version, and I want to continue working on that, cut, copy, and paste. And I'm thinking of implementing maybe a project wizard so that you go ahead and pretty much like in Windows, you know, they take you by the hand and they say, okay, what do you want to create? You need to specify the temp drive, you need to specify a project name, and go ahead. Simple, straightforward, but I think it will improve to the end user a lot.
Well, keep up the good work, and we'd love to hear back from you, you know, in the future.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming on. We appreciate it.
And we'll send our feedback.
Thanks for having me on.
Anytime. We'll send our feedback, and we'll keep in touch, okay?
Okay, great.
Take care.
All right, thanks a lot, man.
Thank you very much.
Bye. Take care. Bye.
You shut up, Link. You talk more than that interview, and I've had enough of it.
What's funny is every time I'm like switching between my screens and stuff over here, and every time we switch to freaking screen, one of my music files started playing. What the hell is going on, you know?
You kept hitting your music files.
And look, I'm not even close to it, man. You know, I'm down here with my arrows down. I'm using Fluxbox.
Are you sure you don't have your hotkey set on your Windows Media Player there?
Yeah, hotkey for Windows Media Player. What the hell, man?
Winamp.
You know, it's just one of them. It's just been one of them weeks for me.
We're going to
start it out with me this week.
Falling in love.
Yeah. For those of you who know me, you know that I am not a little man. And we had an ice storm on Monday night, and I got out of my buddy's truck. I wasn't even, like, completely drunk or anything. Got on my buddy's truck, and I was walking in the house, and I hit, like, the first sidewalk pad in front of my house, and I went down like a box of rocks, man. There was none of that, you know, slipping with your feet like you're some kind of ice skater with your arms flailing in the air. No. None of that crap at all. Just whop. Right on my side. So I've been, like, you know, partially incapacitated all week. And then, you know, insult to injury, I've had 9 million things go wrong, too. So, you know, in order to relax, I figured I'd come over here and do a nice tech show, and I'm confronted with the fact that we have an interview with somebody I know nothing about.
It's okay.
And then my freaking laptop is freaking out the whole time. This is just, it's look par for the course. Hey! We're having a good time here.
So what are we going to do? Are we going to take a music break? Or?
Yeah, we could do that. I got, I know that you sent me some music, Pat. but I'm not going to play that because okay. I have stuff that one of our friends sent us earlier this week. And before I play that, let me just send a quick thank you out to some of the people who have taken the time to email us over the last week or so. Jason Draper, who sent us this music that I'm going to play. Mark Grennan, who actually I believe we're going to try to interview. And he's the author of the Linux Firewall How-To. So, you know, that's some interesting stuff. He also manages the Hertz.com website. So that's just...
I'd be interested to talk to
him. That's really neat. We're gonna hear from him. Of course, Martin Barr. I hope it's Barr. I have this penchant for really butchering people's names. Martin, you know, keeps in touch with us and tells us, you know, that we're doing good or bad on the show and stuff like that. He's a good guy. Matt Revel from Lug Radio keeps in touch with us. Of course, you guys all listen, anxiously waiting for the next Lug Radio episode to come out. And who else do we have? Oh, there's at least a... Okay, a quick question email from, I hope I get this right, Kaz, Q-A-Z, sent us an email today. He's trying to make a Linux boot disk to wipe out older machines that he has at work. He donates all his older machines to the community, and it's his job to clean the data off them. He'd like to make a boot disk he can stick in, turn on. Then it would have to have some kind of way to securely wipe off the old data and put some kind of OS on it. Enough so they see the machine works, blah, 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 blah. What do we suggest? I told him Tom's Root Boot. Do you guys remember that?
Yep.
Yep.
That was my thought. It's a little, you know, one floppy disk-based Linux distribution. Pop it in there. Once you're in there, you can mount the hard drive up and format the hard drive.
That's all you need.
Fill it with, you know, zero fill it or something like that. And, you know, floppies are so damn cheap, you could just leave the damn floppy in the drive, right?
As long as the machine has a floppy drive, you're okay.
If it has a floppy drive, you just leave the floppy in the drive, and if they want to see it work, hell. You know, they turn it on, floppy boots it up, works.
Oh, no wonder why people are having such problems with... We got 26 people hanging off of this.
Oh, we got real people listening.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, that's cool. That's cool.
We need more mirrors.
Gotta go to the mirrors.
Go to the mirrors.
They are listed on the... Go if you hit our website and go to the archive page, there's like a whole list of mirrors and all kinds of good stuff you can get in there. But anyway, we were going to play some music, and I mentioned Jason Draper sent us some music we're going to listen to now. From a band called Avernien. That's at www.avernien.com. Right? And now we're going to listen to a song from them. Here's the confusing part, though. He sent them an MP4s and then resent them an MP3. The song that I'm going to play is... the file name is And She Thought My Name Was Wayne Gretzky. Okay? And let me start this up. The interesting part about this is that when you actually play the file, it says the name of the name of the song is Pony of All Trades by Avernien.
In your head, it's what I did for. Daniel Taylor, and I'm a Debian Linux user, and I think the Linux like that. Hello, my name is Daniel Taylor, and I'm a Debian Linux user. Hello, my name is Daniel Taylor, and I'm a Debian Linux user, and I think the Linux Link Tech Show rocks. Okay, I'm gonna get on this one. Hello, my name is Daniel Taylor, and I'm a Debian Linux user. Debian. Hello, my name is Daniel Taylor, and I'm a Debian Linux user. Hello, my name is Daniel Taylor, and I'm a Debian Linux user, and the Linux Link Tech Show rocks. Hello, my name is Daniel Taylor, and I'm a Debian Linux user, and I think the Linux Link Tech Show rocks.
I'm Leon Pennington from the UK, and while I'm staying out of the rain, I listen to the Linux Link Tech Show.
That's right. Everybody listens to us. Hey, speaking of that, this is a segment where I would like to get some user interaction going, because we have noticed one of the things that really disturbed me, right, when we went to the Linux World Expo, is that everybody has heard of Log Radio, however, like nobody has heard of the Linux Link Tech Show.
Nobody cares.
Yeah, it was like, not that, you know, it's bad that people have heard of Log Radio. I applaud them, and I think that's awesome. However, what we really need at this point, and I know that, you know, we haven't had a major focus on advertising or getting our name out and that sort of thing. However, at this point in time, I think we probably can afford to do some more of that.
I've been posting on some of the websites.
Yeah, Pat has been doing a hell of a job getting us on Elixir and who else?
Elixir and PC Linux Online,
right?
And OS News.
Mm-hmm.
Every time I submit to Slashdot, they don't like me for whatever reason. They always reject it.
Yeah, I got no problems with that.
Dan doesn't want anybody Slashdot
on
the show. But, you know, listen, for those of you who do listen, you know, it would be great if you could help spread the word a little bit. But I'm sure that each one of you knows some other people who use Linux. Normally that's the way it works. You know, we tend to congregate in groups and stuff like that. So, my question for you, my suggestion, would be to, do a little bit of tech show advocacy for us. There is, in fact, a website called, what the hell is it, Podcast Alley, right? Is it .com, .org? I'm looking. Here we go. Podcast Alley.
Remember that commercial for that one doorbell? No, it was the answering machine. It was like the witty answering machine message. Oh, nobody's home.
Yeah, it was good, man. PodcastAlley.com. Okay? I know a lot of you listen to our show streamed live, and you should, because that's the best way to get it. You can talk, you know, via IRC with us, and you can get on Skype and talk with us live and get on the show and the whole bit. And that's the way to be. However, I think one of the other ways that we could get some advertising, per se, is if you guys would go to Podcast Alley, because our show is podcasted, by the way, and we were doing it long before many other people were, would be to go in and just put in a vote for our podcast so that it keeps making, you know, keeps making its way up the list, and it gets a little bit better. Gets a little bit
who's
better
number one
view
right now?
From people. It's always Don and Drew.
Don and Drew. I listen to them. They're funny.
I think they're, I don't know. Okay. You can think they're funny.
Sometimes.
I think they're a little juvenile for me. But that's, you know.
Oh, no.
An intellectual.
Something like that. Something. But no, go over there and check that out. Because, and you can also go in. There's a couple other. Boy, it's been a while since I've been in there. I'll have to look now. Technology. There's also a couple of other good Linux shows to listen to. I mean, like, besides us and Lug Radio. And there's Adrian Bacon's Linux Log podcast, which is good. It's a lot better now that he started calling it Linux. I know we picked on him.
That was me who posted on his
We picked on him earlier about him doing the Linux. The
he corrected Linux himself. I give him credit.
No. It's a cool podcast. I really like it.
He sounds like a real nice guy, Tom.
And it's a little dry, but it's informative. And, you know, you just kind of, sometimes you kind of want that sort of thing. And he goes about and does his thing, and he reviews like the top Linux stories of the week sort of thing. And it's, you know, it's a really good podcast, and I listen to it quite often. So, well, in fact, I do listen to it once a week.
Now, the Linux Box, I don't think they've put anything new
right
lately.
There's the Linux Box that's doing it, and who else?
Nobody else.
Linux HQ?
I know there's Geek
Linux
News,
Questions.
He's not
Linux Questions,
Linux
right.
Questions, yeah.
So, and that's it, right?
And Geek News.
We really need to get a place where, you know, where we list this stuff. Just for Linux stuff in particular, I guess. Because, you know, now that I'm, like, thinking of it and just rattling it off the top of my head, I can't find a damn thing.
Well, it'll definitely help if everybody, you know, those websites on their website. You know, I think it's a good community thing.
Yeah, so, yeah, and that's another good thing. If there's some shows that we're missing that I just can't think of right now or haven't run across, please give us an email and let us know what's going on. Because it's our intent as the as the oldest currently running Linux show, okay, and we are, at this point in time, we are the oldest currently continually running Linux show. It is our intent to make sure that we keep a sense of community about this thing, just like, you know, the rest of Linux. Nice big community, and we like to help each other out and continue the same sort of good feeling that we have with Lug Radio. We'd like to continue doing that and extend our help, if we have any, if we can muster any, to anyone else who wants to do this kind of thing too. Because it's a lot of fun, you know, being able to listen to your favorite topic on a podcast or on a streamed radio show or something like that. It's cool stuff. Anyway, like I said, I'm boring everybody because I'm just repeating myself. But please go to Podcast Alley and put in a vote for us, and also vote for the other Linux podcasts that they have on there, just to make sure they keep heading up towards it and people can people see them a little bit better up there. Don't have to look so hard to find them. And spread the news. Have all your Linux friends and neighbors listen to our show, because they really should be.
So, do we want to take any Skype calls?
Nobody's home.
Do we?
It's up to you. Yeah.
What kind of time we have?
Who's on?
21:40. We have 15 minutes. Well, 13 minutes.
On Skype, I see. Let's see.
We're only allowed to stay on BinRev until 10, right?
Right.
All right. We have 13 minutes. So, we'll say we have 10 minutes. For a Skype call, who can we harass
in
10 minutes?
Andrew Cruthamel, I don't know who that is.
Crathamel.
Brian Reichardt. Joe McLaughlin. Kudzu, that's Alan, right?
That's Alan.
Yeah.
Yeah, Skype him in.
Let's talk to Alan.
No. Nobody told him. He hasn't been on the chat, has he?
Yeah, he's been on. He's on there. Let's bug Alan.
Is he going to answer?
It's ringing.
Nope.
Alan! We're calling you, Alan.
Here we go.
Hello?
Hello.
Hey,
chop.
It's about time, man.
Well, I just noticed that it was actually ringing.
You're supposed to be here.
Well, I'm sorry. I had to do the husbandly thing. Carolyn is sick, so I had to take her to the doctor this evening.
The husbandly thing.
Every once in a while, I got to do the husbandly type thing.
You're a good man, Alan.
Getting bigger than it already is.
She's okay, right?
Oh, yeah. She's got the flu.
Right.
You just tuck her into bed with that full size poster of
the bass player.
Tim McGraw, yeah. Bass player from Tim McGraw.
I'm making her sleep on the couch. I'll just put the poster in front of her.
There you go. Well, that's great. So how many times did you hear me screw up the show tonight with the music playing every time I changed my screen?
I heard it come up a couple of times. I thought it was pretty funny.
Yeah, I bet you thought it was funnier than I did. And Dan's over here compiling his stuff.
No, he's listening to what Alan's saying.
That's normal, though. Just wait until he starts burning DVDs while we're doing the show.
Yeah.
The light starts flickering.
I think that's coming soon. He's still compiling a DVD author.
I'm having problems.
Yeah. You sure are.
I am.
He has no pens.
Well, I know the error message I'm getting. It's the error message I'm getting for QRender. When it tries to run, it says QRender.cpp in member function void space QRender :: transcode parentheses QRender CPP 121 error system undeclared first use of this function. So I guess it's undeclared first use of the system function. And then it's just error. Each undeclared identifier is reported only once for each function it appears in. So, there's an error there. And if I had been a better programmer, I'd have it solved by now.
That's true.
But I'm just a lazy piece of crap.
Dan, what happens during the show?
I'm not compiling during the show.
Okay.
I am fulfilling the request of a guest / listener to take the software for a trial run.
Uh-huh.
So it's not really compiling during the show.
Okay.
It's supporting the efforts of a show guest.
Oh, is that what it's called?
It's exactly what it's called.
Okay. It's you know, Dan is doing it, but it's like by force, you know.
He
wasn't at all interested in doing it.
I don't want to compile anything anymore.
Oh, what are you going to do?
Speaking of Skype, I picked up a Logitech USB headset.
Oh, yeah. You got to tell everybody about that.
The Premium 300. I picked it up for about $36 on Amazon, and it works awesome with Skype. You just plug it in, USB port. You know, the system comes up, it sees it right away, and you go into Skype, and there's a little in the setup. You can go in, and you can set it up with a headset. It shows up as Dev DSP1. And it works awesome. It's so much better than using a microphone in a crappy old headset. It's nice and clean. They give you a voucher for 120 minutes. I was calling people, and everybody I talked to said the quality was
really
good.
That's pretty good. $40, you get the headset and 120 Skype.
Yep.
What is it? $10 for
10 euros. It's like $12 for 10 Skype minutes. And the call,
that's pretty damn good. That's a good deal.
The call to who do we call? Mike
Stutz, yep.
Stutz. Mm-hmm. Did we call Marcel?
No, he was on a computer.
I think we Skype to Skype him.
Yeah.
We Skype?
That was Skype to Skype one.
Yep.
I thought we called somebody else because so far in all the Skype to LAN that we've used, we went from 10 euros down to 8.82 euros worth of Skype minutes. So.
Wow. Well,
Skype out is cheap. It's like 2 cents a minute, right?
Yes.
So the other thing I was using the headset for was Audacity.
2.02 euros a minute.
And in Audacity, you can go in and configure it so that you can record and play back through the headset, or play back through your regular sound card. And it was really good. I think I'm going to use it for Audacity now.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's sweet. The Logitech Premium 300, and anywhere between $30 and $40. I've seen it.
How come you picked that particular model? Is that like one you saw at the show?
That's the same exact one they had at the show.
Oh,
the quality was very good. It was nice.
Didn't
want to
check anything else out.
There was another one too. The Plotronics, the thing that Zandros was advertising, they're releasing a version of the distro that'll come with a headset with Skype pre-installed with some Skype minutes.
But that's that Plotronics headset, right?
Yeah, it's a cheaper one. It's only one earphone instead of the two.
Oh, the one you got has it's stereo.
Yeah, it's nice.
Ah,
it's real nice.
I get you.
It has a little mute button and a
with a microphone.
Yeah.
We have to try that.
Check it out, man. If you want to come by and check it out.
I would like to. Boy, I wish you'd brought it with you because I'd love to plug it into my laptop and see if it works on a 400 megahertz laptop.
If you want, I'll bring it next time.
Yeah, do that. Because, see, the thing with a lot of laptops, and a lot of you people are going to know this. Sometimes you have funny sound problems on laptops. And one of the problems that I have on this one is not that I can't play sound out of it, because that's how all the music and all the show stuff comes right off my laptop, off my Dell. The problem is when you try and put a mic or a line into the thing, you get complete crap. You know what I mean? A mic in on this particular laptop sounds like a 900-year-old robot.
It's cheap kind sound of thing. Cards. That's the problem.
And it's really bad. And, you know, on a lot of other laptops I've tried to sound on the import, just doesn't work at all.
We'll have to try it.
So I was thinking a few times now about how nice it would be able to be, you know, to be able to record on my laptop itself. And the only way I can do that is through a USB microphone. But I really haven't had anything that I could physically try in order to get the feel of how it would work. This would be really cool. So
we'll try it.
That's something we'll have to try, and we'll report it to you all so that you know. But that would be a cool thing if it worked well on a 400 megahertz laptop. That would make me some happiness. Yeah.
Anyway, awesome.
Listen, guys. What else we got going on?
What else we got going on? You know what? Now I got the new system. Our car got the digital cam recorder. I figured now it's time to see about capturing some audio. I mean, some video. Yeah, audio. It's about time to capture some audio. So, you know, grab Kino.
Text your video live.
Yeah. I grabbed Kino and decided, let's see how it goes. And I had a hell of a time trying to get the damn camera to be recognized. And I kind of thought I had, you know, it was because of the RAW 1394 device.
You got, like, it's that FireWire thing for your camera, right?
Right. I thought it was because the RAW 1394 device did not exist, and I was expecting it to be automatically created, but it wasn't.
Recompile.
Well, that's what I did. I did the recompile, and I was reading the directions for Linux IEEE 1394, and they're like, when you compile libRAW, you got to run makedev so you can make the device. Well, I just grabbed the package off of linuxpackages.net because that's when I've done the full compile for Kino and everything before, so I took the lazy way out. And the Linux package doesn't create the device, and I didn't see anything in there about how to create the device. So I grabbed the sources, compiled that, and I'm like, well, wait a minute. Why am I going to reinstall it? Let's just see what happens when I run makedev. And it did. It created a device, and after that, boom. I was up and running. So all this time I'm sitting there playing around with removing modules, adding modules, with the hot plug, recompiling the kernel, compiling the IEEE 1394 stuff as a module as opposed to into the kernel. All I needed to do was make the stinking device. Yeah, it would have been a lot easier had I started with that.
Something, read the documentation, something.
Well, I did read the documentation, but the problem was I had 1394. And I didn't think I would have to make the device myself, which required me to kind of pull down the kernel. It didn't say anything in the linuxpackages.net information.
Faster machine helps big time.
Oh, yeah, it does. And, you know, I fired it up. I recorded it. I'm trying to think whether I don't recall it playing or seeing the video while it was recording. Maybe I didn't do something right there, but it was just a quick couple of seconds, and it did a good job. I was very impressed.
Have to check it out more.
It's definitely
so now we can all get together and make our Tech Show Premium Edition DVD.
Yes.
That we can
video highlights
send out and sell for bandwidth money.
Yeah, something like that.
Something.
It'll be like Jackass the movie. Like
they can show Dan without his pants on.
Yeah.
Put your head through the computer monitor.
That's not nice. Guess we better start wrapping
all
stuff
those
up.
Nasty pictures of Alan we have we can put on. Compilation DVD.
Slideshow.
Oh, well.
You think anybody's going to want to buy it with all those, though?
I don't know. We sold at least one of those T-shirts.
Yeah. It doesn't help when you buy them.
That's the frightening part.
The one with the dog?
Yeah, I'm wearing it right now.
By the way, I wished that there had been Actually, anybody, really, who had heard of the tech show when we were at the Linux World Expo. Because we had some really cool giveaway stuff there, man. We had, you know, Dan and I were wearing each our respective versions of our T-shirt. And we also had, like, little business cards printed up, which were cool. And some buttons and magnets. Tech show buttons and tech show magnets. All of which are available currently at the Tech Show store, which you can get as a link right off the main page of the Tech Show website. But they were pretty cool, man. And, you know, if you had come up to us when we were at the Linux World Expo, boy, we'd have given you some good swag. It would have been cool. And then we could have taken pictures to prove that somebody actually listened to the show, which is what we were really looking for.
It was cool, though. We met some cool people.
Yeah, we did. We met some really cool people. And, I'm anxious to go back next year and see what happens. Except for, I think next year we should really try and do the whole three-day thing and get a .org pavilion in the whole bit.
We'll have to register a new domain.
We
got to
get a .org name first.
I'm actually in the process of setting up my blog, and I was looking at some domain names to possibly use, and I think I'm going to do it under .org.
Yeah.
So we could use that.
Do it.
.org.
Do it.
We are.
We're at time.
Closing time.
At this time, we
play
will be shutting
music.
Down the BinRev stuff.
We only have 30 seconds left on BinRev.
Yep. Okay, we're going to close the music. Here we go, everybody.
Thanks for listening.
And we're going to catch you next week on the Linux Link Tech Show.
Good night.
I'm Link.
Dan.
Pat.
Good night.
Alan, too.
Yeah,
hey,
and Alan.
Good night.
Good night.
The Linux Link Tech Show.